Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the Get Better Wellness Radio Show. This is Erin Chamberlick coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois. And today we are going to explore the topic of feeding real food to our children and babies. And unfortunately, sometimes we get the wrong advice from people that we thought we could trust. And, you know, we're having some issues here with our kids. We have more than a third of children and adolescents are overweight or obese, and one in three are going to have diabetes unless something changes. That's what the numbers are showing. And this is just a problem that's getting worse. Childhood obesity has doubled in children and tripled in adolescents in the last 30 years. So, you know, we're like a dot point here when you think about how long man has been walking the earth. So what's been going on in the last 30 or 50 years? And maybe we're not feeding those kids right. So today I have Anna Durhock on the line with me to explore this topic a little bit further. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks, Erin. Thanks for having me again.
So, yeah, this is Anna's second time being on the show, and she has a degree in dietetics and an MS in nutrition and is a licensed nutritionist for the state of Minnesota, and she's on staff at Nutritional Weight and Wellness, a company that Darlene Kvist has started and is doing great work up there in Minnesota. So I invited Anna. My youngest is graduating high school on Friday, so I don't remember those days. And if I did, I'd cry because I wasn't a real foodie then. And we ate, you know, a lot of peanut butter and jelly on white bread and Kraft mac and cheese and Fruit Loops and Nutri-Grain bars and, you know, I apologize to them all the time. I'm like, I'm so sorry. So, Anna, tell us how old your children are.
Okay, so my oldest will be 7 in 2 weeks, and then I have a 5-year-old and almost a 3-year-old. So I'm kind of right in the mix of it all. Yeah.
So, you know, this is another good angle, too, because part of what I want to talk about later is, how do busy parents eat real food and prepare real food? So you qualify for that, too, with 3 children
yes.
Under 7, and you're working as a nutritionist. So you have a lot to bring to the party today.
Yes, I do.
And
yes.
Yeah. So if you want to catch our last show together, it was, you know, on real food nutrition for a healthy pregnancy, and you can just go to iTunes and put in Get Better Wellness, and you will find all of the archive podcasts. So, you know, we can take this a lot of different directions, but let's just start with the obesity epidemic. Like, what, you know, what are some of your thoughts on that? Is it just that our kids have all become couch potatoes?
Absolutely not, although sedentary activity has increased with all the video games and things like that. But I know for a fact, looking at research and just seeing kids in our offices, that it is definitely more of a food-related issue. I see a lot of kids who live on cereal and pasta, and they are, and the school lunch program is just atrocious. I don't know how bad it is in Chicago, but it's terrible up here in Minnesota. And so what is happening is we're just eating a lot more sugar in relation to the healthy fats and proteins that our kids need to grow. And so we're seeing kids, you know, 12 years of age who are pre-diabetic already and who are, you know, 40 plus pounds overweight for their age. And so I know it's a lot of juice and it's soda that our kids are drinking. I hardly ever drank soda when I was a kid. I mean, it was like a special treat. So I think it's a combination of all the sweet beverages we're drinking plus, or they're drinking plus the the processed carbohydrates that they, you know, they're snacking on all day long, especially in the summer. I see it if, you know, the parents are gone, and I see this more in, you know, like adolescents, but when the parents are gone at work and, you know, they have free reign of the refrigerator, they're eating, you know, Doritos and, you know, Hostess snacks, and they might not even be eating real food for most of the day until their parents get home and have dinner. So I think it's a combination of that plus all the sweetened beverages that are available to our kids today.
Right. There's so much available to all of us, not just our kids, but if you just stroll through the aisles at the grocery store, you know, it's like you look at the packages and it's like, where's the food? What is that?
Right.
You know, I can't pronounce it. I don't know where it came from. It's probably not something we should be putting in our bodies, but unfortunately it somehow passes any scrutiny, if there is such a thing. And
right.
So just, you know, then all of a sudden people are like freaking out, like, okay, so I'm not supposed to feed cereal? We thought that was healthy, right?
Right,
and,
right.
So what kind of, you know, cereal is bad for kids?
Well, I'm mostly talking about the cold cereals, and it doesn't matter if it's Fruit Loops, like you were talking about, or if it's Smart, you know, or if it's Smart Start. I mean, I go through this with people in my classes, but Smart Start turns into about 10 teaspoons of sugar per cup in the body. And most people think it's so healthy because it's got the fiber and it's got all these nutrients added, but that's the point. They're added. They were stripped before, and then they had to add them back in because there wasn't any nutrients left. So, you know, it's a kind of a double-edged sword because there's so many misconceptions about how to eat, you know, and so people get themselves into trouble by listening to one group of people, and then now we're saying, you know, don't eat cold cereal. You know, but, I mean, small amounts of oatmeal are fine. Oh, and, you know, if you make, like, a hot cereal out of quinoa, I mean, that would be fine. But the cold cereals are basically just going to turn into quite a bit of sugar in the body, and most people can't handle that amount of sugar.
And then they're adding milk and bananas and have a glass of orange juice. So by the time they leave for school, there's, you know, how many teaspoons of sugar? Maybe even, you know, half to a whole cup of sugar.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean,
so
I usually
we have a lot of jacked up kids.
Yes,
go ahead.
Do. And I think that's the problem with all the behavioral issues, whether it's ADD or, you know, just learning disabilities like dyslexia and things. I think they're so hyped up on the sugar that they can't calm down, and then they have these, you know, they act out and or they're falling asleep at their desk because they can't focus. You know, I think that's a huge issue today.
Yeah, and then the I heard this the other day that, well, we don't need grains as a staple like we're told.
No.
The base
no.
of the pyramid is really wrong, and it was put together by people who actually benefit from us eating more grains, the USDA. But in 1943, this is maybe you've heard of this, but it was new to me, the U.S. banned the sale of processed grains because it was causing beriberi, you know, a deficiency of B vitamin. But but then, you know, so we couldn't eat cereal, processed cereal in 1943 until the food manufacturer saved the day and figured out if they added synthetic vitamins that we could get back on the market with that cereal. So that tells you something.
Yes,
and like
it
you
does.
Said,
it
it's not good. Not good vitamins being added.
Yes. And
so,
that's
all right.
The problem. Yeah.
We're not eating cold cereal. What other kind, you know, things are kids maybe eating, like Eggo waffles and you know, flavored yogurt squeezy things, Nutri-Grain bars, you know.
Bars.
So what's going on with that stuff?
Well, sometimes that can have even more sugar in it, you know, depending on, or if they're eating like Yoplait light yogurt with, you know, a bunch of Kellogg's granola, that's even more sugar than a bowl of cereal. So, and it's got a bunch of added colorings in it, and, it, you know, it's, and a lot of times it has artificial sweeteners, especially that light yogurt. I know for a fact Yoplait light has aspartame in it.
Oh boy.
And then even Activia. I mean, that the low sugar stuff has sucralose, which is Splenda. So we're either getting a bunch of, you know, white sugar, or we're getting a bunch of artificial sweeteners, which are actually 10 times worse for our brain than the other stuff. So, yeah, I think that's why, you know, our kids are, they're having all these issues, especially brain issues, because there's no real nutrients, there's no good fat going into their brains. It's all this artificial stuff.
Let's talk about that fat thing for a little bit. Now, when a baby is born, it's it's supposed to be a little chubby, and it's supposed to be breastfed in the ideal world. I know that sometimes doesn't work for people, but sometimes we're just choosing to not do it because of convenience. And so what's in, you know, the breast milk that gives the baby the you know, nutrients that it needs? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So there's a specific essential fatty acid called DHA, which actually we get from fish or algae. The fish eat algae, and that's how they get the DHA, and that's how us humans assimilate it. But DHA makes up close to 60 to 70% of our brain matter. And so it's like most of our, when somebody calls you a fathead, that's a good thing, because most of our brain is fat. You want it to be that good.
Right.
And then the rest of it is water and cholesterol and obviously vitamins. So that cholesterol is super important too. And so if the mom's been eating a low-fat diet, maybe hardly ever eats fish, you know, or does not supplement with a good omega-3 fish oil, then what happens is that breast milk, even if she does decide to nurse, is very deficient in DHA, and that baby doesn't get that initial good fat for their brain. So that sets them up for, already learning disabilities, or later on depression, things like that affect, how our brain works. So, but if the woman is getting great omega-3s, then her baby's going to get all this wonderful DHA for brain development, for focus, all those things that go into how our brain functions. So that's like...
Right, and I'm so sad for the moms who don't get this information, because they... maybe they're breastfeeding, like you said, but they're trying to lose their baby weight and they're eating low fat and, you know, high grain and they're not getting the nutrients to their baby, like you said. So what can they do? Let's start with the mom. What kind of diet, we did talk about that in depth last time, but just give us a few bullet points for the mom who's listening.
Yeah. So, the first thing is just even while you're pregnant, you can be supplementing with a good DHA or an omega-3 fish oil. And you can find them all over. Just make sure you get them at either a co-op or a natural food store, because the other ones tend to be rancid. That's why they're so cost-effective. So make sure you get it from a reputable nutritionist or even an MD that knows a little bit about nutrition, at least. Metagenics would be a great brand, or Nordic Naturals. Carlson's is one I use as well. So, and even getting, 600 milligrams of that good DHA per day will help, your breast milk be very sufficient in it, and then the baby's going to get it. So I would say that would be a good place to start.
And breast milk has cholesterol. By design, that's what God wanted these babies to have, is fat and cholesterol primarily. So don't be afraid, that's not where most of the cholesterol comes from anyway, is the diet. But, people who are cutting out eggs and, trying to reduce their cholesterol, this is not, the goal here.
No, the goal is to get lots of good cholesterol, especially from the egg yolks. Plus the egg yolks have 100 milligrams each of DHA if you're getting them from free-range chickens. So that's another good way to get DHA. And that's what we should be eating in the morning. We should be eating protein. So eggs or like a good sausage or, leftover steak from the night before. It should be something that's rich in those good fatty acids plus the omega-3s. So, and the cholesterol.
Do your kids... Do your kids eat eggs with you in the morning?
A lot of times,
you're
yes.
3, 5, and 7?
Yes. I have two that are pretty good egg eaters. My Genevieve, she's my 5-year-old. She eats basically the same thing every morning, unless it's her favorite sausage, which I get from the farmer's market. But she eats whole fat yogurt with some whey protein powder and then fruit in it. And she absolutely, that's her favorite. So, yeah. So, but then she takes fish oil on the side. Yeah. So, there's lots of things you can do. But eggs, I would say, would be the richest source of that good cholesterol and that good DHA.
And how do you cook your eggs for your family and you?
I usually do a scramble, but make sure I don't overcook them. Otherwise, you're going to lose all that those good fatty acids. So, and then I put vegetables in there. I usually do like something like a broccoli slaw or some mushrooms because my kids like mushrooms. Or sometimes I do an over easy egg too. I like that, and so the yolk stays intact and doesn't get too hard. I like that a lot too. So, I make an egg bake. My kids love egg bake, and that's how I get my middle one to eat eggs, is I make egg bake all the time, and they love that. And I put spinach, and I put some good chorizo sausage in there, and it's tasty. So.
But there's no bread, like a lot of egg bakes have,
no,
right?
There's no bread. A lot of times what I do, if I have time to do this, is I will, for a crust, I will steam some cauliflower and mash it into the bottom of the pan. And if I don't have time to do that, then I'll just layer a small amount of hash browns on the bottom, and that's the crust. So,
okay.
Good stuff, yeah.
And then it's done ahead of time, which is, you know, one of our issues that we don't have time to cook. So you make this whole 9x13, and then you can even eat it cold. You can even cook it in little muffin cups, and then it's a little bit more fun.
Yep.
And grab and go.
Yeah. And that's
so
the best thing
then, at what age do babies get to enjoy egg yolks in your world?
In my world, I usually, when my kids were young like that, I started them around 5. I tested at 5 months to see if they were interested. And then, but most babies, even at the age of 4 months, can handle a soft boiled egg yolk with, you know, a little bit of breast milk and avocado. So that's, you know, 4 months is when you can start trying it to see if they're interested. Most of my kids were closer to 5 or 6 months. So,
and this is where I failed my children too. Is I thought, because my pediatrician said rice cereal is where we start, and so we did that. And now, come to find out, you know, that's not the best foods for babies. There's a lot of problems with starting infants on grains because, you know, there's anti-nutrients in the grains and gut irritants, and you're setting them up for possible, you know, sensitivities down the road. So people were probably surprised to hear you say egg yolk. Now, we're not talking about the white because we don't want to, you know, set them up. But
Yes. So, but the egg yolk and... Yeah, so, I mean, and even liver, if you can get your hands on a good chicken or beef liver that has been raised, you know, the right way on grass, that would be a good thing to introduce the first time, too, like with a little bit of egg yolk. Those things are so rich in nutrients. It'd be the best thing to give to your baby. So that would be the second food I'd give them, beef liver.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, we think they're not going to like it, but they don't know, you know.
Yeah, they have no idea. They're like, oh, what is this? Exactly. I know, because we're, as adults, if we're the, you know, if that was the first time we got liver, we probably didn't like it. But, you know, that's the first thing they're tasting, so they don't know any different. So.
Yeah, it's like, finally, something different. So, you move from, go ahead.
You mentioned the grains, right, like the rice cereal and stuff. I just wanted to mention to those who don't understand why we're recommending egg yolk. It's because most kids, and this has been researched, that if you know, they don't have the enzymes in their gut to digest the grains. And that's why you don't really want to give them grains until they're over a year old. So, anyway, you probably
good
knew
point.
That, but I just wanted listeners to know.
You know, I know things and then I forget things. And so it's good. That's good why we're having two of us on this topic.
That's
but,
great.
Yeah, so then after egg yolk and avocado and liver, do you have a certain order? Like what about pureed meats or vegetables, you know, sweet potatoes, things like that?
Yep, so usually once they kind of they get used to the egg yolk and if they've been introduced to the liver and the avocado, then I start adding in like pureed beef or chicken, if you can get it to that good consistency. And then I add a lot of types of vegetables. The cruciferous ones tend to be really hard and cause a lot of gas, so I tend to not add those until later. But like green beans, I've pureed up green beans. I've pureed up sweet potatoes. All of my kids loved sweet potatoes. You could do parsnips. You could do carrots. I did beets. I mean, all those wonderful nutrient-dense vegetables. Yeah, anything you can puree up to a good consistency would be awesome for the vegetables. And then same with the protein. If you can find good free-range turkey, I did that as well. And it's super easy to freeze. I just froze it in little ice cube trays and, you know, popped a couple out and let them thaw out. So.
And did you do that with your vegetables too, freeze?
Yes.
Puree and
yep,
freeze?
And then I just... Yep, and then I mixed them because this is what, and all babies are different, but I found with most of my kids that if I mixed them together, they were more likely to actually eat more of it because of the, you know, they didn't just have the meat, you know, they had the vegetables mixed in there, so they had a different flavor. So they tended to like that a little bit better than just doing it on its own. So.
Yeah, and all those little jars, they can get expensive, but not all of them. are, you know, perfect either because they have, don't they have to, you know, kill them with a little bit of heat if they're going to sell them as jarred food. So
yeah.
The nutrients, maybe not so good in there and then just the expense. So, you know, just take a half a day in the kitchen and cook some vegetables, mash them up, freeze them. And, you know, save yourself some money, but give your child lots of nutrients that way. So your children, I remember, I can't remember the details, but there are some food sensitivities going on in your house. Can you tell us about that? How did you figure it out? What were their symptoms? And, you know, what's going on now?
Okay, yeah. So Isabel was the one who didn't have anything, which is great. She was the oldest. But then Genevieve had very severe dry skin, and it kind of turned out to be eczema, and so I basically kept her off dairy for a good 2 years, and then I introduced small amounts of goat cheese and things like that, and she seems to do okay with it now. And she doesn't have any type of eczema. Her skin does get pretty dry in the winter, but I just make sure to not bathe her as often, obviously. But then Lucas had severe allergies. I was nursing him, and at 4 months, he just all of a sudden had all this eczema all over his body. And so what I did is I basically did an elimination diet. So I took out the gluten and the dairy, and that didn't seem to clear it up totally. So then I took out eggs, which I love, and then my chocolate. That was another big one, and within a week of taking those other two out, his eczema was almost totally gone.
Wow.
So I was dairy, gluten, egg, and chocolate-free for almost a year, and then when he was 14 months, he kind of weaned himself off of nursing, and then I introduced a little bit of goat's milk, yogurt, and goat cheese, and he seemed to do fine with that. But he pretty much still eats gluten-free because I notice, like, if he goes to, like, an in-law's birthday party and he gets a piece of cake or a cookie, it, like, his skin, especially on his face, breaks out. And so I know that's still a huge issue, and it'll probably be an issue for the rest of his life. So, but that's how I found out how sensitive I was to those things too, because I was still doing some dairy and I was still doing small amounts of gluten. And after that, I was like, wow, because most babies react to what you're sensitive to, and that's what most women who are breastfeeding don't realize. But and I didn't either. But once you take those offenders out, then the baby doesn't react to them anymore. And, you know, later on, they might be able to tolerate small amounts of those things. So, yeah. So that's
okay.
That's kind of how I dealt with it. But, yeah, I mean, some of us have...
Now, breastfeeding does other things for the good bacteria for the child, as well as, you know, vaginal delivery. So what about... You know, let's talk about these kids who either they're, you know, born via C-section and or they're not being nursed. What's going on with their normal probiotics that should be there?
They virtually don't get any.
None.
Unfortunately, because that's where we, you know, initially we get that good flora through the vaginal tract, and then we also, if we're breastfed, we get it through breast milk. But if they're born C-section and, you know, the woman decides she can't nurse or she doesn't want to, then they are set up from the get-go for, you know, getting specific allergies, especially food sensitivities, for asthma. They have a higher rate of asthma. Or risk of asthma. Also, ADD is a lot more prevalent in those babies that don't get that good flora initially and get it throughout their infancy. And even learning disabilities are huge as well. We see that with kids that have not been breastfed or don't get that initial flora. And just an example, my niece is a perfect example of this. She is 3.5. She has had severe eczema and very, very sensitive skin since she was 1 month old. And she was born C-section. Her mom, my sister, was not able to breastfeed. She breastfed for like 2 days, and then her breast milk wasn't coming in enough, so they just went straight to formula. And you saw it from the get-go, like at a month, she was just totally... all over her body. They were, you know, rubbing her with cortisone cream all the time, and it was just so sad to see. And and I knew what was going on, and so I, you know, and Alicia, you know, listened to me, and she gave her Bifido for like 6 months, but then after that, she kind of fell off the wagon, and so she still has very, very bad, poor skin. So.
Yeah, and I, you know, we aren't told this because it's just not common knowledge that, you know, and I'm sure you see kids like 12, 13, 14 who, like, can't poop and they got to take medication for constipation. And you start asking questions, and then you see this history of antibiotic use, just coming up short on the probiotic scale for you know, three reasons that we've already identified. So, you mentioned Bifido, and that's a type of probiotic that you recommend. What age? Let's say you have a baby, and all of a sudden you realize, oh, my gosh, that's my baby they're talking about. So what can we do to help this mother?
Okay, so you can start a baby on, you know, those good probiotics like Bifido, like, right away. And actually what I did, even though I knew I had the good flora, I started – putting very small amounts on my finger and let my kids lick it off, or I'd, you know, put some on my breast so, you know, when they breastfed, they'd get it. If you can't nurse, you can always put it in their bottle, and I would start with about an eighth of a teaspoon of the powder of Bifido, just because that's the most abundant in the gut, so we like to use that the most. And I do that maybe 2 or 3 times a day. And then you know that they're getting that good flora, no matter how, you know, what they're getting, either formula or nursing or breast milk. It'll just prevent a lot of problems, you know, in the future. So
some people may have heard of acidophilus, but we're talking about bifidophilus. Is that the right term? Is there a number of organisms in an eighth of a teaspoon? So if they're getting a different brand than, you know, your brand, is there something they can look for?
Yeah, there's. It's usually in billions of organisms. Usually, I say for a baby, an infant, if they can get between 2 and 3 billion, 2 to 3 times a day, that would be awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I know you use NutriKey.net. If they don't have a source, they could get yours.
Yeah, order it from ours, yes.
And then as they get older, let's say, you know, toddlers, children, adolescents, do you continue on with that, and how does the dosage change?
Yep. Usually you what you do is, like, for an adolescent or my kids, I usually give them, because it's usually a maintenance dose if they don't have a lot of intestinal problems, I give my girls, like, a capsule 3 billion, and that's good to maintain the good flora. My son, I still give him powder, obviously, and I sometimes put that in yogurt, which is easy for him to eat, and he probably gets 3 to 4 billion per day. So it's more of a maintenance dose once they have that good flora, so you don't have to give them as much unless they've got issues going on. So
okay. And so you supplement with Bifido. What about the DHA, vitamin D? Do the babies need that yet?
Yes, and I was actually going to mention vitamin D. But DHA, yes. And I would say, you know, once they're able to take, like, a teaspoon of cod liver oil just any good omega-3 fish oil, and they do have liquid DHA, too, if you just want to stick with DHA, that would be the best thing to do. And just do once – you could just do it once a day, a teaspoon a day. My girls, they like this – it's from Nordic Naturals, and it's a strawberry essence DHA, and it tastes like strawberries, and they think it's candy. So I give them 2 to 3 a day, and that's about 400 to 600 milligrams of DHA.
So that's chewable?
Yeah, it's not labeled the chewable, but what my kids do is they just break it open with their teeth and suck out the good stuff. Oh, and then they spit out the gel cap.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. The cod liver oil, a lot of kids just like the taste. Now, people who haven't had it, it's improved, you know, with lemon or, you know, strawberry essence or whatever.
Strawberry,
but it's not bad. And some kids are like, clap their hands and like, ooh, fishy oil, you know. So don't, like, put your preconceived, you know, ideas into their little heads. Just say, oh, good, look what you get.
Exactly. It's so good for you. So. Yeah, but that you can start them at a really young age. You know, as soon as they can swallow those types of things, I would definitely start them. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Now, does your 7-year-old go away to school and eat lunch there yet, or is she still at home?
Nope, she's in first grade. She'll be going to second grade, so she does go to school. I always send her with a lunch. And she's my best eater by far, so usually – she will take either some type of meat roll-up. She loves ham. So, and a roll-up is basically, you can do it 3 different ways. I just take meat and I either spread hummus or avocado in there or cream cheese, and then you just roll it up like you're going to eat a wrap. So she takes those a lot. I always give her a piece of fruit, and then she loves cucumbers, and her favorite thing is when I sprinkle sea salt over them. So usually she'll get some type of vegetable like that, and then I try to get some good fat in there. So she doesn't always eat it, but because if she doesn't have the roll-up, then she doesn't have a lot of fat. So, but usually avocado or hummus is in there. So, yeah, and then she usually takes her water bottle, and that's usually what she eats, or leftovers. Like I said, she's a great eater. She'll take chicken wild rice soup to school in a thermos. She'll take smoked trout to school. She's an
just
amazing
like every
eater,
kid,
so.
Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. She's my sushi eater. So she loves fish. So she's not, I don't think she'll ever be, you know, deficient in omega-3s, but yeah. So she takes anything, and I think we just have to, as parents, and I know it's hard when you work and you're busy, and but you don't have to just send them with sandwiches. You can be creative. They like that. Most kids would love to have, you know, chili or something of like a leftover hot dish. I mean, my daughter gets excited when she gets chicken wild rice soup for lunch. So, mm-hmm. You know, we have to plan. It's huge. Planning's huge when you're eating, you know, a traditional food diet. So.
It is. So maybe we could talk about that for a minute, you know, because healthy eating starts at home. And, yes, you can be a full-time working parent or a busy homeschooling mom and do this cooking from scratch. But a lot of us weren't taught, you know, maybe you grew up with TV dinners and stuff that came out of the drive-up window. But you can still learn, and cooking real food is, you know, not that hard because you're not making these elaborate, you know, sauces and seven-layer lasagnas and all that. You know, get the grill going and throw on a couple things of chicken and burgers and, you know, have enough for a few meals. So the thing that does not work is it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon and you have no idea what is for dinner.
Yeah, exactly. It takes planning, right?
So, you know, let's talk about some planning tips, you know, how to prepare ahead and things that maybe you do at your own home or how you advise others to make this, you know, real food thing happen.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll try to plan out at least 3 or 4 different meals throughout the week, because usually I don't cook every night just because, you know, we're busy and we have events and stuff like that going on. So what I'll do is I'll sit down like on Sunday night and I'll say, okay, Monday I don't have to teach, so I'm going to make, you know, muffins and meatloaf, and I'll make a double batch so we have, you know, leftovers. And then maybe Wednesday I'm home all day, and so I will take a couple hours when my son is napping and I will make either chili or I will make like a turkey wild rice casserole, and I'll throw that in the oven and I'll make like a double batch of that. Or on a night I'm going to teach, and my husband's not a bad cook, but he just, you know, he gets overwhelmed when the kids are home with him and he's a workaholic.
Yeah.
So he doesn't feel like cooking. So what I do is those nights I get something in the crock pot going. So I will make either like a white chicken chili in there, or I'll throw a roasting chicken in there and then throw some vegetables in there with it. And just say, you know, have a salad, you know, on the side, and mm-hmm. you can do that. That's easy. Or, you know, a roast. I mean, roasts are awesome in the crock pot, and, you know, 8 to 9 hours on low is perfect for a roast, and that's a lot of times what I do, too, and I'm just, you know, if I have a small roast, I put 2 of them in there, so I have leftover mm-hmm. meat for a couple days after. Another one I do, and this is one of the easiest recipes we have, is it's called cream cheese crock pot chicken, and we used to have it on our website. If anybody's interested, they can totally contact me because it's super easy. And what you do is you can use frozen chicken breasts, and you throw 4 or 5 of them in there. I usually do 6 because I like to have a lot of leftovers, and then you pour a large can of tomatoes or 3 to 4 good sized tomatoes in there, a jar of good salsa, a can of black beans drained, and then optional is corn. I don't usually put corn in because we don't digest it very well, and it's just more starch. So, and then you cook that on high for about 4 hours, or low if the chicken breasts are thawed, and then you add a half a brick or a full brick of, you know, full fat cream cheese, and then you let that meld, you know, for about 30 minutes, and then you shred up the chicken, and it's like a stew, and it is phenomenal. And then I usually, because there's not a ton of vegetables in there, I usually eat a salad on the side, or I'll make, you know, like, you know, some broccoli and steam or saute some broccoli. And it's like the easiest thing you could ever do. And the good thing is that you don't have to be totally prepared because you can use frozen chicken. So
good.
If they want that recipe, they can totally you know, email me.
Why don't you give us the website for Nutritional Weight and Wellness, and then how to contact you since you offered that up.
So our website is weightandwellness.com, www.weightandwellness.com. Everything is spelled out. And then my email is Anna, so A-N-N-A, at weightandwellness.com.
Okay, thank you. And there are recipes. A lot of the things that you've mentioned are probably on your website, like
Online, the mini
muffin tin meatloaf.
Yes.
And making things interesting to kids, you know, sometimes it's like that, like making mini meatloafs and little egg cups. And what other, like, kid-friendly ideas do you have for making food fun?
Well, I use toothpicks. So especially for vegetables, because they kind of feel like it's fun to eat off wood sticks.
And so
I do that. I put little toothpicks in, like, vegetables. I also make a really good ranch dip, which is actually on our website. It's called the Little Dippers recipe. And
it's
just, you know, it's just mayo and sour cream and some good spices. And that's really, really good. And I use that with vegetables. I use it with, if I just make almond meal chicken strips, you know, there's several things you can use it for. I've used it on a salad. But it's one of the, it's something that my kids will eat anything with. Or if you don't have time to make that, which is, it's really simple, but if you don't have time, there's a couple different brands of dressings I like to use. You've probably heard of them, Erin, but one of them's Annie's. And then another one I like is Drew's, because it doesn't use refined oils. And they have a really good cowgirl ranch that my kids like. The biggest thing I find, if you want to get your kids involved in eating real food, you have to let them cook with you sometimes.
Ah, there you go.
It's huge, and I've seen it in my girls. They light up when I say, do you guys want to help me cook? You know, and they get their stools out, and they have little aprons that I bought them, and you know, it's like they're part of the food, and so they want to actually eat it. And that is, I mean, my girls will eat probably twice as much as they would have eaten without them helping me. So, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
They really want to eat the food because they feel like they helped, you know, make it a part of our family. And so it's huge. So I think that's the biggest thing. And sometimes we just want to get dinner made and be done with it. But, you know, it's so helpful when they want to help, and at that age, if they want to help. So I let my girls chop vegetables, and I, you know, I let them stir, you know, the soup and all that stuff, and they just, you know, they absolutely love it. So I think that's huge if we can just help, let our kids help us.
Yeah, I remember I never, ever ate fish growing up, and as a teenager, another family took me, you know, vacation, and we went fishing, and then the dad, you know, prepared, and like, here's the fish you caught, you know, so I thought, well, I got to try this, so that might be another tip, too, if your kids don't eat fish, take them fishing, and then make a big deal about the one they caught. I mean, they gave me an award for catching a fish, and
That's awesome. And so,
you know, I'm not saying I became a fish eater, but that was the first time I ate it, and then I slowly started wading in with, you know, mild white fish, and, you know, then you work your way up to salmon, and then you, you know, can get some anchovies or then those little
sardines.
So how do you get your kids, I know you've mentioned in the past about, is it Isabel or Jen, Isabel that eats everything, right?
Yes, Isabel
and
eats everything.
Smoked fish and smoked trout. So how do you get your kids to eat, you know, sardines?
This is what I do, and this is kind of how I started eating sardines, because I was so scared of them at first, and I love fish, so I don't know why I was so scared of them. But what I did is I either get water packed or the olive oil packed, and I make it into kind of like a tuna salad, only it's with sardines. So I'll add a little bit of mayo. And I usually get the skinless, boneless, because that just freaks me out when I see a whole fish.
Yeah.
You know, I can't handle skin. So I usually get the skinless and the boneless, and that's what I do for my kids. Otherwise, they might kind of look at me weird if I'm making them eat skin. And I put a little bit of mayo in there. And then I get a really good sweet pickle relish from Trader Joe's, which doesn't have any high fructose corn syrup, and I put about one and a half tablespoons in there, and it's already pretty salty, so I don't add anything else, and I just mix it up. And I usually eat it on like a bed of greens. My daughter likes it on a piece of sprouted toast, so that's what I give her. My other two, they will eat like maybe a quarter cup, but it's more than what they used to eat, you know. So, but my son will eat it. He's gotten to the point where he likes fish just on its own, so he will actually take a fork and just eat it with a fork. He doesn't even need to eat anything with it.
And that's your three-year-old, right?
And that's my three-year-old. So he is a really good eater, too, when he wants to be. I think he's in that stage where he just wants to graze all day long. So I try to get as much good food as I can.
Yeah.
And then at dinner he's starving, so he'll actually eat a really good dinner. But the rest of the day he kind of just grazes. So.
Well,
but
let's talk about grazing food. So yeah. We know we're not talking about fruit snacks or chips.
No.
You know, or goldfish crackers, because all of these have highly processed ingredients. They have, you know, grains that are damaging, you know, the gut, like gluten, and artificial things like high fructose corn syrup, and anything with corn in it is probably genetically modified. So what are some smart snacks and that we can give our kids to take to school or just have out, you know, between meals?
My kids love beef sticks, so I do a lot of beef sticks, either from the farmer's market or from the co-op. You just want, you know, obviously you might make sure it's from a grass-fed source. And then, I shouldn't say obviously, that's rude, but try to whenever possible. fruit is a great snack. All my kids are good fruit eaters. As I mentioned before, they also love cucumbers. So I do that a lot. I cut cucumbers out because I like the crunch, and then I just sprinkle them with a little sea salt. Genevieve, who is my pickiest eater, loves cherry tomatoes. She could live on them, so I usually have those out as well. For Isabel, for snacks, she usually takes pistachios and an apple. She loves, or if I have beef jerky on hand, the good beef jerky, you know, that I either made or got from Trader Joe's, I'll put that in there. Because one time I sent her with just fruit, and she was like, Mom, I'm starving, you know, and I felt so bad because she must not have had enough to eat. So I try to get one or, you know, two, like at least some fat in there, protein with her fruit. And also, if they can handle dairy or the A2 A2 gene, I learned so much about that after I talked to you. I'm so amazed.
Great.
So,
yeah,
but if you can get,
stuff.
You know, if you can get dairy products that have the A2 gene, you know, or like raw milk, cheeses and things like that, my kids love that for a snack with a piece of fruit or strawberries, you know. So those are good grazing, you know, or if you get, my kids love the rice crackers, like the Nut Thins. So I'll have that out with a little hummus and maybe, some turkey. I mean, it's, you know, we think of finger foods as, like you said, crackers and fruit snacks and, you know, pretty much processed things, but they don't, finger foods don't have to be like that. You know, they might take a little bit more work because you have to chop them up, but they are, you know, or apples and peanut butter, that's a great snack. I do that often as well, and it's really refreshing on a hot summer day, too. So.
Yeah. Or like ants on a log where you have, you know, like
yes.
almond butter or something on a piece of celery with a few raisins, or just, you know, a smaller version of a meal, like a small bowl of chili or a little bit of, you know, egg salad or tuna salad with, you know, and they can even dip their vegetables in that if
in
they want, or guacamole.
Yep, exactly. Like my son will take, if I make salmon salad, he'll take little baby carrots and he'll dip his carrot into the salmon. And sometimes he just sucks the salmon salad off. Whatever works.
Whatever.
But, you know, yeah, because they'll eat it, you know, if they're used to eating that way. And the problem is that most kids are starting off eating processed foods, and then we're trying to get them to eat real food, and that's the hardest part, you know. So.
Right.
But.
So the ones who are just coming on the scene now, don't ruin them with processed food, and then you'll have good eaters.
Yes, exactly. So.
So the thing, you know, that's really helpful if both parents can be on the same page, because it doesn't help if one of you is trying to be, you know, a real food eater and feed the kids that way, and the other one's got, you know, soda pop and chips. And
yes.
So that would be really helpful. But there are two books that I wanted to recommend for parents that are like paleo type, you know, cookbooks with kid-friendly recipes. One is Eat Like a Dinosaur by Elena Amsterdam, and it's just a fun book, you know, kids, kid-friendly. They can look in it and pick things out and with crazy names that sound, you know, like silly food. And the other one is Paleo Pals by Sarah Fragoso. Paleo Pals, and then it's like subtitle is Jimmy and the Carrot Rocket Ship. So,
awesome.
You know, you just want fun things that your kids will say, yeah, let's make this. That looks like a good snack. Or you say, what do you want to have for, you know, dinner? Why don't you pick something out of your, you know, book here and then get them involved like you do. And I like that, getting them apron ideas. and even the little boys may want one too, so don't leave them out.
Yes. And I think my son doesn't care about cooking yet, so he's like, whatever. But hopefully...
Yeah, just feed me.
just feed me. Just give me the food. So, yeah.
The other thing
and
is...
Go ahead, Erin.
Go ahead. I
was going to mention, if your kids are not vegetable eaters and you're just trying to get stuff in them, the one thing I do is I put spinach in smoothies, and my kids can't tell. So that's a good tip if anybody is really trying to get vegetables in. So... Yeah,
a green smoothie is, you know, you have to sell it. Like, this is monster drink or something if you make it too green. But a lot of times it doesn't even change the color if you put berries in there. And then add, you know, some good protein powder. You use whey, but there's other, you know, like
there's other forms.
Raw protein from Garden of Life is a good one. Because you don't want to just eat fruit alone when it can be vegetables, fat, and protein.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, the fruit's there to make it taste good. But I was just going to mention, you can get online, probably in stores somewhere, bento boxes and, you know, just the compartment boxes to take lunch in, so you can keep meat separate from fruit, separate from, you know, salad, and then it's a little bit more fun. They even have, you know, they have plastic, but they have stainless steel bento boxes too. So we're not just, you know, brown bag and everything is a disaster, you know, by the time you get there.
Right.
So that, you know, and a thermos like you send, you know, to school can work too. What about treats? Like, you know, it's party, birthday, you know, it doesn't all have to go out the window, right?
Right. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because my husband found a recipe on Facebook, and it was actually really bad. Like, it was Cool Whip. They used Cool Whip and, you know, strawberries to make this ice cream sandwich. And what I did is like, well, I could do that with real whipping cream. So I whipped up whipping cream, and I actually just did this yesterday. And then I got some good you can use frozen or fresh strawberries. I just used frozen because I had them on hand. And I let them thaw out a little bit, and I chopped them up, and I whipped all that stuff up together, and then I sweetened it with a little bit of pure maple syrup. And let me tell you, they were the best ice cream sandwiches ever. And I can't do gluten, and I think I got gluten-free natural graham crackers or something like that. So that was the thing. I didn't even have that. The kids loved them, but I just had my own in a little dish. And they need to freeze for about an hour. And then they are frozen treats. And my kids thought they were better than the ones that they were trying at Trader Joe's. So, you know, and it took me like 10 minutes to do that. You know, it didn't even take me that long. So these things don't have to take forever. There's a great avocado chocolate mousse recipe that I found. Actually, one of my coworkers gave it to me, and I was like, this is the best stuff ever. And it's low in sugar, and it's high in those great fats from avocados. And so, mm-hmm. and I just usually whip up some whipping cream and put that on top. And then there's, for birthday parties, so I can actually partake in things. I make a flourless chocolate tort, and mm-hmm. that's really good. And it has like 6 ingredients in it, so I know it's actually more real than anything.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, those are kind of things I do for treats. My kids sometimes have, you know, like regular Haagen-Dazs ice cream. I don't mind that, but they get like half a cup. Like, that's a serving. And what else? What else do we do for treats? Those are the big ones. I mean, I usually do a little bit of dark chocolate with some almonds at night if I do feel like a treat. But, there's quite a few paleo recipes that, you know, are more like treats, and they are better for you and they're low in sugar.
And that's the way I, you know, find something like an apple pie made with coconut flour, almond flour crust, and
yes.
then just apples with cinnamon, and you don't even have to sweeten it hardly at all.
Right.
And it can be, you know, taste really good. And then for a party, I made that avocado chocolate mousse, and then put that on the bottom of the, you know, like parfait glass or something, and then
yeah.
cut up fruit, and then either coconut milk on it or heavy whipping cream whipped up. And people
wow.
loved that, and they didn't think, oh, this is healthy for me, but, you know,
right.
it was.
Because they didn't know, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't tell. I mean, these things are so natural, and yet you can't tell that they're actually good for you. So
it is, you know, new to a lot of people who might be listening, and it might seem overwhelming, but you don't have to change overnight and become super mom. Just start picking one thing that you want to do. You know, maybe
That's
you
great.
Just want to work on getting dinner to be really healthy, pulling out the, you know, you don't have to have the bread, and you can just do, you know, the meat or fish and a couple of vegetables, a little bit of fruit. And it doesn't even have to be elaborate. And then once you feel like you're doing dinner well, because that's the closest to real food for most people, then you know, pick
exactly.
another meal or pick a snack and just start introducing healthy snack choices and slowly stop buying, you know, the Goldfish and Cheerios that everybody thinks babies have to eat Cheerios.
Right. I know. It's such a misconception, but yeah.
Yeah, so we're just trying to help our kids be healthier, and they're falling into a terrible, terrible trap of too much processed food, and we don't want them to be that 1 in 3 who will have diabetes and 30% who's overweight. And the studies say parents don't recognize their own children as being overweight or obese, and, you know, that's, I don't know why. You know, it's like the cute baby fat that is still there at 12 is really damaging health. And,
right.
and we need to, you know, help our children. They're not going to choose. So, you know, getting the bad stuff out and the good stuff in and having lots of choices. But the other thing would be making, you know, a family meal time that's free of distractions, because even studies show just that one thing can dramatically lower obesity rates. But 30% of families don't even eat together, and the ones that do, like 25% eat together, but they're watching TV or somebody's on their phone or iPad or whatever. So,
right.
you know, just
There's no
make this holy ground.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And so there's lots of benefits to, you know, also their behavior as well.
Yeah.
So how do you have any tips? This isn't a food question, but how do you limit screen time and with your kids? Because they're, you know, growing up in this world of, you know, everything, computers and cell phones, and, you know, there's got to be a limit.
Yeah, and I think what I do is, you know, if they're eating, I'm like, you cannot watch TV because you're going to be distracted and then you're not going to eat. So, you know, you have to sit in the kitchen and eat, you know, and once you're done, you know, and then, you know, if they were watching a show or something, but I, if it's nice out, they're outside. I'm like, we're not going to
mm-hmm.
sit inside. We're not going to do this stuff, you know, because we have 6 months of winter here. So there's limited time when we can be outside all the time. So, you know, and usually, you know, if we don't watch a ton of TV. It's more if we put a movie on, and so they probably don't watch more than 2 hours of any type of, you know, television mm-hmm. per day, and it's not every day. And I know some people don't, you know, they maybe do it once or twice a week. But my kids are super active, and sometimes they just need downtime, so I let them watch a movie. But it is very limited, especially if they're eating, and even a snack.
It's
hard with my daughter when she comes home because she just wants to veg. You know, she's tired. But I'm like, you know, I want you to get a good snack, and then if you want to watch some TV, you can. But I don't want you to eat and just like mindlessly mm-hmm. eat, because that's what happens. And even as adults, you know, we're tired from work and we sit down on the couch and then we just mindlessly eat and we don't even realize how much we're eating, you know? So
right. Yeah, you're like, gosh, did I just eat that? Because I don't think I enjoyed it.
Exactly. Do I remember what it tasted like?
No. Well, there's Robert Lustig. He's a physician, a pediatric endocrinologist at University of California, and he has a suggestion, and, you know, he helps overweight kids and kids with diabetes and everything, that for every minute of screen time, then require a minute of exercise. So, you know, you can keep it more balanced, and or you know, if it's not going to be, you know, exercise, you know, reading a book or something that's equally beneficial, but moving is the idea, and, you know, the kids don't get enough chances to do that. So, yeah, force them outside. You must
go
play.
That's right, force them outside. You have to go outside and play. But that's great advice, because they say sitting is what actually is deteriorating our health, like all the sitting we do. So,
it's only going
to
get
more.
Worse, kids.
Yes.
And they're cutting gym class out of schools in some cases, and so we've got to figure out how we get our kids moving.
Yep.
So, well, Anna, thank you so much for being on the show today. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks, Erin. It was awesome. Maybe we can meet up sometime. I'd love to meet you.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to be destined for a shopping trip up at the Mall of America, so
awesome.
I will make it a business trip, too.
All right.
So Anna can be reached at weightandwellness.com, and you're seeing clients in Maple Grove, is that it?
Yes, yep, in the Maple Grove office.
Okay, and I have a new office myself here in Gurnee, Illinois, so I am doing nutritional consultations in Northern Illinois, and either one of us can meet up with you on the phone or Skype as well. There is usually a real food answer to a lot of the chronic conditions that people are suffering with, and you don't have medication deficiency, and we can help you sort some of that out. So thank you, Anna, and thank you, listeners.
Thank you.
I hope you all have a great day.
All right.
Take care.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.